Or is it first? If it is first, we have to move to the second one. If it is second, we have to move to the third one. This hadith is not only to praise Salman and Abu Zar and Miqdad. Remember, they were not masoom, they were like us. We are not talking about the darajat of Iman of Ali and Ali Ali. You know, they are not the issue of darajat there. Rather, loving them, believing in them, and following them takes us to level at different levels in darajat. And so this darajat are not for the Aimma. This darajat are for us. And this is where we have to realize that when we look at the name, you know, look at the reality and the demand of the name Muslim, the name Mu'min, the name Shia, and the name Ja'fari.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Pollution. Part 1.
We've seen videos and images on the internet with this writing on them. This spot on Earth is a real haven. Lush green forests, beaches with white sands, the water in the sea that's so pure it looks like glass, and a unique wildlife. I mean, somewhere like Borneo in Southeast Asia, an island that's divided between three countries, Indonesia, Malaysia, and the tiny state of Brunei. The Borneo forests are a live nature museum. It's one of the oldest rainforests on the planet. That's the habitat of over 15 flora species, 420 bird species, and 222 mammals. You cannot see these living beings anywhere else in the world. All of these have turned Borneo into a real heaven. But the heaven is not far away from hell. From 1985 to 2005, every year, 850 hectares of Borneo forests have been ruined. Only from August to October 2019, over 8,578 square kilometers of forests in Borneo were destroyed in a rare fire incident. The fire and the smoke bellowing in the air was so widespread that the pollution reached 1,100 kilometers away to Indonesia's capital, Jakarta, as well as Kuala Lumpur and Singapore, and darkened the sky.
For 3 months, locals lived under a blanket of toxic sulfurous smog.
In 3 months, over 600 million tons of carbon dioxide was emitted to the atmosphere. It was more than the carbon dioxide Australia produces in a year. It was 13 times more than the CO2 emitted from the automobiles all over the world in a year. The incident got environmental activists worried, but in Indonesia, almost no one cared.
Nearly 10 million children are at risk from air pollution from Indonesia's forest fires. That's according to the United Nations. UNICEF is warning the children could suffer lifelong physical and cognitive damage.
Right at a time when people in Southeast Asia were choking to death and the animals were perishing in droves, Indonesian President Joko Widodo issued a new decree that gave people the thumbs up to ruin even more forests and establish palm farms instead of the old trees.
Palm oil, a multi-billion dollar industry with a pretty bad reputation. It's been blamed, among other things, for wiping out rainforests, pushing animals such as the orangutan towards extinction.
The farms were the main factor for the survival of the 255-strong population of Indonesia and, of course, the main factor for their death.
I only own 1 hectare of land, on which I harvest about 400 to 500 kilograms of palm oil. I need about 7 euros a day to feed my family and for my children to go to school. If the quality of the fruit is poor, I barely make 6 euros, which isn't enough. I'm constantly in debt. I don't own anything anymore. Even a kiosk owner has loaned me money. I own everybody money, and I can't afford cigarettes. We can only buy what we absolutely need to live.
When you go to a whopping mall for your daily shopping, when you're sitting in a restaurant to eat dinner, when you wash your hair with shampoo in the bathroom, when you're biting off a piece of chocolate, when you're using cosmetics, and in many other things you do during the day, you're in fact using palm oil. Almost 80 kilograms for each person annually. Now, if we know that 85% of the palm oil in the world comes from Indonesia and Malaysia, we could ask a few important questions. Who's burning the forests? Who's polluting the air? Are the poor farmers in Borneo behind the increased levels of CO2 in the air? Or is it the people who buy and use palm oil every day more than before? During the past 20 years, Malaysia's palm oil exports have increased 1,500 times, and the turnover now stands at over $21 billion. The country is a top producer of palm oil in the world. The world's never-ending demand for palm oil has made the people in Indonesia to break the boundaries. Instead of planting rice and vegetables, despite the hardships and enjoying the beauties of the nature in the country, they've opted for industrial farming of palm trees with a shorter life but with more amenities. We're talking about $400 of monthly income for a 2-hectare farm with about 400 palm trees. The income isn't considered meager in Southeast Asia. It can tempt anyone.
In many other regions, too, rainforest is being burnt down. 2.6 million hectares have been destroyed, a region almost the size of Belgium. Palm oil companies are responsible for about half the fires laid. Who did this?
They can't find the arsonists, or don't want to find them. But everything here was burnt down, even our fields and houses.
Why not sell your land?
It's the most precious thing I own. If we work with the palm oil company, we have to take on debt. I have 4 sons. I want them to have the land, and I'll defend it.
The deliberate destruction of the forests in Borneo has taken a huge toll on the environment, but maybe the most important of all was the destruction of the orangutan's habitat. During the past 4 decades, the population of orangutans in this region has been reduced to half. The animal is on the list of the endangered species now. Hence, in 2009, a group of environmental activists put on orangutan uniforms and held a protest rally outside the headquarters of one of the largest oil palm consumers in the world, namely Nestle. It might seem to be an odd comparison, but these days, if you bite off a piece of yummy chocolate and you're carefree, you're in fact an accomplice in killing an orangutan. According to the protesters, large industrial firms that don't care about the damage are to blame for the environmental pollution caused by palm oil. The only thing they care about is an increase in their income. Every year, 8 million people in the world die due to smoking. Annually, about 770,000 people in the world die from AIDS, and annually, over 435,000 people lose their lives for being infected with malaria. Large media in the world are quick to spread the news and put the fatalities of those causes in the limelight. When someone dies in a car accident, it's something you can see with your own eyes, but there aren't many people who are aware of the annual death toll of 9 million people in the world due to air pollution. That is one out of every 9 deaths in the world due to air pollution. As a death is invisible, it's hard to trace. The death rate due to air pollution is larger than fatalities from AIDS, diabetes, and car accidents combined. 95% of people all over the world breathe polluted air every day. Things are far worse in developing countries. Children's lifespan in Southeast Asia is 30 months, and in the southeast of the Sahara Desert, 24 months less. In Europe, polluted air takes the lives of people 15 times more than road accidents. It has reduced life expectancy in Britain by 1.5 years. Perhaps the invisible crisis served as an incentive for U.S. journalist Beth Gardner to publish a damning book on this subject. Gardner lives in London along with her British husband and young daughter. She's carried out extensive research on air pollution. She's traveled to different parts of the world to find out the source of air pollution and why people lose their lives to it. The outcome of her trips and research is her book Choked, which highlights shocking facts.
I've lived in London for more than 18 years. I came here from New York. But as much as I've always loved Britain, there was something that bothered me from the start, a thickness to the air, the smell of exhaust that hit me every time I walked outside. It was only years later, when I was working on an article about air quality at the 2012 Olympics, that I sat down to read some of the science of what air pollution does to our bodies and how much of it there is here in London. It only took a few minutes of Googling for me to see that the fumes I dismissed as a nuisance were actually toxic.
In one of the points, she's mentioned the controversial decision by the European Union to use cars run on diesel fuels in the 90s. The decision was made based on the argument it would reduce CO2 emission and was a plus for the environment. But what happened was actually the polar opposite. Millions of people were exposed to higher degrees of nitrogen dioxide, which is way more dangerous than carbon dioxide. Such decisions are not unprecedented throughout history. In 1921, American chemist Thomas Midgley concluded that if he added lead to gasoline, he could prevent knocking in internal combustion engines. So, until the 70s, lead was used as an additive to gasoline almost all over the world. But suddenly it was revealed lead was very harmful for our health. It wasn't the first disaster left by Midgley. He was a person who discovered chlorofluorocarbons combinations for a first time, and in 1941, the American Chemical Society gave Midgley its highest award, the Priestley Medal. Later on, it was revealed that CFCs have ozone-depleting effects, and Midgley was named the most harmful scientist in history. In another part, Gardner mentions the Volkswagen scandal known as Dieselgate. In 2008, North American and European countries decided to use a solution called AdBlue to reduce air pollution. AdBlue is made up of 32.5% pure urea and 62.5% deionized water and is widely used in Euro 5 and Euro 6 automobiles. The solution is added to the catalyst section of diesel-run cars and reduces the poisonous gases of nitrogen oxides to a large extent. It is used in many engines in large volumes, including in Audis, Mercedes, and BMW products. But in 2008, Volkswagen announced that the company's 2000cc engines do not need AdBlue. After a while, Americans found out they had been badly deceived. Volkswagen had used some software with complicated algorithm to bypass the emission standard tests to show lower amounts of pollution. Volkswagen CEO Martin Winterkorn resigned after the scandal and 500,000 cars produced by Volkswagen were recalled from across the world. Furthermore, Volkswagen had to pay up to $22 million as a fine, but the fine went to the pockets of the governments. Actually, it didn't make up for the disaster it had wreaked on the environment and human beings. According to U.S. officials, the cars cause pollution over 40 times more than normal cars.
Waging war on pollution. This is a younger generation's fight back following the recent revelations that the air we breathe is dirty and dangerous.
So we wanted to make it quite anarchic, a little bit dangerous, revolution, sort of that kind of attitude.
Beth Elisa's group Clean Air Now started this anti-pollution billboard campaign to try and engage a younger audience.
We'd really like to see more people become aware of the problems of air pollution and in that way start to reach out to the government and then for them to take more action.
Whilst air pollution might bring to mind Beijing or Delhi, in Europe, France, Germany, Spain, Italy and Britain have all been found to be breaching air pollution limits.
Well, using this monitor, you can see the level of dust particles in the air, and it's changing all the time and actually often spiking to get to a level that over a sustained period would be considered unsafe. Now, areas like this have proven so bad for the air quality that the EU has issued the UK with a final warning and told Britain to clean up or face the consequences.
There have been numerous similar scandals in recent years. Gardner has highlighted one of them that has to do with Boris Johnson, former UK Prime Minister and London Mayor. According to the research, when Johnson was the Mayor of London, he had gotten dust particle suppressants sprayed around air quality monitors to bring down their readings. These deceptive methods are for advanced countries. In impoverished nations, things are different.
For a long time, we didn't have a choice about relying on fossil fuels, but we don't need them anymore. It's time to move towards something better, toward a future built on clean energy, from the wind and the sun, electric cars instead of diesel and petrol, less driving, more walking and cycling. It won't be easy to end the era of fossil fuels. They're woven into the fabric of our societies. And there is a lot of money and a lot of power invested in keeping us dependent on them.
In 1952, 7 years after World War II, countries were seeking to accelerate their production. Factories were working at full blast every day. Millions of tons of charcoal were burnt in the world to help the factories keep producing. London was in ruins due to the Second World War. Those days, it was still the biggest city in the world with a population of 8 million people. Almost all of the population and the factories around London used charcoal to supply energy. December 5th, 1952 went down in history forever.
Time is 8 o'clock on the 6th of December, and here is the news. London has been brought to a halt by dense fog, which has descended overnight. Long queues have formed on main roads, and there are reports of motorists abandoning their vehicles and continuing on foot. London Airport is expected to be closed.
Good God.
The Meteorological Office has issued a statement saying that a persistent anti-cyclone over London is to blame. Smoke from the capital's chimneys is being trapped at street level, which is aggravating the fog. Windless conditions mean it is expected to last for some time. Be careful out there. It's a real pea super.
The cold weather, coupled with the smoke coming out of factories and homes, buried London under a thick layer of smog. The smog was unprecedented in history. It affected all aspects of life. For the first time, people faced a phenomenon called inversion. In just 4 days, the sulfuric steam claimed 4,000 lives. The figure later rose to 12,000 people. About 100,000 people were infected with various diseases. Officials throughout the United Kingdom introduced a strange strategy to eradicate the mysterious disease. Soon, everyone was talking about offshoring pollution.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, training kids to be confident. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of training kids to be confident and keep secrets in the Islamic lifestyle. It is very important that when we are raising kids, when we are training our children, and when we are raising them up, we teach them the ethics. And one of the most important ethical thing which is related to our daily life or the Islamic life is that our kids, they keep the secrets. They learn how to keep secrets, and they are confident. They when we tell them something or when they know about someone, they keep those secrets. We know that in the childhood we have seen when kids are playing to each other, they keep complaining about each other, they keep telling the things that they're doing. So we need to stop kids from doing this because it will have effect on their personality. And their personality, rather raising as someone who can keep the secrets, who is confident, rather it becomes someone who keeps telling everyone about the things. And, you know, sometimes we have kids who talk a lot. They have this habit of talking a lot and keep complaining about things. If we want to avoid such a thing, then obviously we need to raise them in a way that they keep the secrets. And why is it important? It is important because it is making their personality. Their personality should be in a way that they keep the secrets and they look a person who is trustworthy. So in order to be a trustworthy person, in order to be someone who is serious in his life, who takes things seriously, and he does not leak the secrets or, you know, tell the secrets of the others or maybe anything that he has said. For example, we want our kids not to be the backbiters. So the very first thing is to teach them how to keep secrets, inshallah, and the importance of this. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of raising our kids by telling them to be secretful or training our kids to be confident. Now, in order to raise them, in order to train them to be confident or to be trustworthy, it is important to talk about the importance of it. And what are the reasons that people, they leak the secrets, the people, if they are not trustworthy, what are the reasons? And if the kids, if our children know about those reasons and we have trained them well, obviously they will avoid these things in their life. And the very first thing is that people who are talkative, they cannot keep secrets. So we need to stop our kids from being someone who is talkative. And yes, I know that sometimes we want them to be talkative so that they build their it builds their confidence. But this talkative should be in a way that wherever it is necessary, they talk there. They don't fear of speaking about something. They don't fear talking with the people or socializing with the people. But if someone is too much talkative, it cannot keep the secrets because it's his habit or the person's habit is to talk. And when they talk, during talking, they leak the secrets as well. They tell everything that they know because they want to talk. On the other hand, the second thing, which is the factor that the people, they cannot be the trustworthy, is where people want to show off themselves. You know, when they want to show off themselves, they tell everything like, I know this and I know this. Why do they do this? It's because they want to show that I'm someone and they're showing off. So therefore, these two things are the initial things that we should avoid. We should train our kids in a way that they avoid to be talkative and they avoid to be someone who shows off, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio. in the limelight.
The EU Commission admitted the core inflation rate in the Eurozone, which analysts say is directly linked to sanctions against Russia, remains stubbornly high. This hits people's purchasing power, especially in lower and middle-income groups, and hurts the competitiveness of EU companies. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV reported protests in Europe are continuing unabated. Recently, thousands of teachers and healthcare professionals took to the streets in the Spanish capital, Madrid, demanding better pay and working conditions. This can be seen in other parts of Europe, like the UK and France. Britain has found itself grappling with the worst cost of living crisis in decades. Inflation is at a 41-year high, and food and energy bills have skyrocketed. In the last few months in particular, millions are struggling to cope. Throughout Europe, the ruling classes are claiming that they cannot make any concessions to the striking masses, while at the same time they are funding bank bailouts and vast military budgets to fuel the war that NATO is waging against Russia in Ukraine. According to Euronews, households across Europe are struggling to pay bills as the cost of living crisis bites and leads to street protests in many countries. It started with energy, but the cost of living crisis has now spread to all sectors and is affecting all of Europe and further afield. The problem has many components, but the one that most concerns political leaders and affects households the most is food price inflation. In February, gas prices in Europe fell to their lowest level in almost 18 months. However, food prices are continuing their upward trend. Also, Wall Street Journal, in its recent article, wrote, "It just had an energy crisis. Now Europe faces a food shock." Wall Street Journal stressed food prices continue to rise at a rapid pace, surprising central banks and pressuring debt-laden governments across Europe. Meanwhile, Bloomberg reported Brexit has weakened the UK economy and driven the nation into a sort of geriatric decline. British financier and chairman of the private equity firm Terra Firma told Bloomberg recently that since the UK left the European Union, it has been competing on the world stage, but the country's current laws are not suitable for the new environment. Billionaire Guy Hens suggested in the outlet's weekly Industries podcast, unless change happens, the UK risks becoming poorer compared to other European countries. He said, "I'll look at the UK and see that in 2030, Poland will be wealthier than we are. In 2040, we will be the poor man in Europe." According to Hens, the UK should not have left the EU, as the country needs rule of law and consistency, but not a single politician is talking about going back. He lamented that Brexit has essentially thrown the country back 50 years to the 1970s, a decade that is widely remembered as the time of crisis, with a skyrocketing inflation, high unemployment, strikes, and power cuts. according to Bloomberg, the enormous amount of political change that has happened in the UK over the past 7 years has left investors concerned and the public lacking confidence, the billionaires believe. Now that the UK is out of the EU, the British government could take a radical approach and change some of its laws, Hans said, citing the country's extraordinary complex labour laws that are a nightmare compared to other European countries. The UK also needs some boring bookkeeping, and the current Prime Minister Rishi Sunak seems to be good at it, according to Hans. The financier noted that the British government has succeeded in repairing some of the damage caused by Liz Truss, whose economic policies were absolutely disastrous and would have led the country needing a bailout. Truss' argument, however, that the UK needed to become much more productive to be more competitive was 100% right.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed, smiling he would say, I am a Muslim. Dini al-Islami dini wal-Azam ghayru dini Muhammad illi hadini.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. We are going to talk about the rules of taqlid, or following a religious scholar, a jurisprudential scholar, according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography. A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtaza Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, When the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hauza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching, one can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jad, hosting this program. And our guest speaker is Sheikh Javid. We are still talking about and asking a question, answering the questions related to the rules of Taqlid based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Javid, is it permissible for us to refer sometimes to a deceased marja, a mujtahid, and other times to the most learned living mujtahid with respect to particular issue on which they have different opinions? Like, for example, time and time again, you were talking about, like, precautionary, for example, issues, right?
Yes.
That the religious authorities usually permit their duty bounds to refer to other marjas, right?
Yes.
So on those occasions, is it possible to go back to some deceased marja for the fatwas?
Well, it does not make any difference when it comes to ihtiyad. Ihtiyad is not a fatwa. It is just a matter of precaution.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to follow and initiate taqlid of, or let's say start doing taqlid in that very specific area. You want to follow a mujtahid, you should actually follow a living mujtahid and not go to a deceased mujtahid. You cannot go to a deceased mujtahid. You should not follow in that case. So when it comes to, you know, going back and forth, sometimes following a living mujtahid and sometimes following a deceased mujtahid, of course, His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei says that it is basically permissible to continue following a deceased mujtahid according to the opinion of the religious authorities who allow to stay in taqlid of a deceased mujtahid. But once you start doing taqlid of a living mujtahid, then the precaution is not to refer back to the deceased mujtahid. You cannot go back to the deceased mujtahid because you have started doing taqlid of a living mujtahid.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, it's a matter of consensus among the religious authorities and jurists, generally speaking, and that it's not permissible to refer to a deceased mujtahid once you have started doing taqlid of a living mujtahid.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not permissible. And His Eminence, Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, says that this is a matter of precaution according to his opinion. But as a measure of precaution, it's not permissible to go back to the the deceased mujtahid.
I see. Okay. And another question, Sheikh Javid, would be, is it obligatory for the followers of the late Imam Khomeini who wish to continue his taqlid to seek the permission of a living marja or does the unanimity of most of the marajas, well-known scholars concerning the permissibility of continuing to follow a deceased marja suffice?
Well, supposing the unanimity, now assuming that there is such a unanimity mm-hmm. among the scholars and there is such a consensus regarding the permissibility of continuing to follow the deceased marja, continuing the taqlid of late Imam Khomeini is permissible and there is no need to refer to a specific mujtahid in this regard. So you can refer to any mujtahid who is available, who is accessible, and ask his permission, because it doesn't make any difference at the end of the day which jurist you consult and whose opinion you get or whose permission you get, because all the religious authorities are supposed to be unanimous and supposed to have the same position in regards to the permissibility of continuing to follow the mujtahid, the deceased mujtahid. So it doesn't make any difference at the end of the day who you consult and whose opinion you seek or permission you get to follow a deceased mujtahid. So it's permissible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. Let's take a short break and we come back after the break and continue our program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Stay with us.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Mohammed Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are still talking about the rules of taqlid based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Javid, what's your idea and opinion about continuing to follow the deceased marja with respect to an issue upon which a duty-bound or mukallaf has or has not acted during the lifetime of that marja?
That's a good question. Continuing to follow a deceased mujtahid in respect of the issue which, for example, a duty-bound person has acted or maybe he has not acted during the lifetime of that marja. Well, continuing to follow a deceased marja with regard to all issues, even those which has not, the duty-bound person has not acted upon during the lifetime of the marja, is permissible and valid according to His Eminence and according to the opinion of His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khomeini. There is no objection to someone following or keeping, continuing to follow that mujtahid even in those areas of religious duties which he did not happen to act upon in his lifetime. Provided that he, in some parts, partially, let's say,
yes,
he acted, okay? If you act according to the opinion of a marja and follow and act according to certain, you know, according to his opinion in some areas of the Islamic jurisprudence, it's enough. You are considered to be a muqallid, so you can continue to follow him in other areas also, even after he, let's say, passed away, he died, and now you want to keep following him. It is permissible.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. Sheikh Sawit, does the permissibility of continuing to follow a deceased mujtahid also apply to those who, during a mujtahid's life or lifetime, acted upon his fatwas, although they were not jury-bound then?
That's also a good question. You know, if the taqlid of a person before the age of Shari duty, mm-hmm. or the age of legal responsibility, legal obligation.
Yes.
To a qualified mujtahid was realized in a correct way, and it was materialized in a proper way, it is permissible to continue with the taqlid of that mujtahid even after his death. It does not, so basically we come to understand that it's not basically necessary to attain puberty to start taqlid of a mujtahid. A child who has not yet hit puberty and who is not considered to be baligh in the eye of the Sharia can do taqlid of a mujtahid. And when, for example, the mujtahid dies and that person is still has not attained puberty, he can still continue to follow him after his death or after his departure.
Thank you very much. There's another short question that I would like to squeeze in here, and that is somebody asked us, we are followers of the late Imam Khomeini, and we continue to follow him after his heartbreaking demise. At times we face some new religious problems due to the fact that we live in a period of a struggle between the Islamic world and the global arrogance. They say that we feel that we should refer to Ayatollah Khamenei and do the taqlid there. Is it permissible for us to do so?
His Eminence Ayatollah Khamenei says that, people who were following Imam Khomeini, they are allowed to stay in his taqlid. They may keep following him even today after, more than 30 years, mm-hmm. or around 40 years. They can keep following him. And His Eminence also says that at the time being, there is no reason for people to give up his taqlid. If the need arises to obtain the Shari'i ruling concerning new issues, of course, they can contact or they can correspond with the office of His Eminence to get their answers, mm-hmm. their questions answered according to the opinion of His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei. Otherwise, they can keep following him, mm-hmm. if there is no new legal or current issue for which there is no answer from Imam Khomeini.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. And thank you very much, my dear listeners, for listening to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم لا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو وحيد قدير محيي مميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.